Now, another BloomerBoomer.com podcast. Your host, Andy Asher, living life over 55. Do you remember when?
Do you remember when?
Do you remember when?
My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president.
Wikipedia describes Jimmy Carter, the 39th President of the United States, awarded the 2002 Nobel Peace Prize. Before becoming president, he was a peanut farmer, served two terms as a Georgia state senator, and one term as governor of Georgia. Well, hi, everyone. Well, today's podcast, maybe you've heard the phrase, your encore career. Well, it's meant to describe the work you do after you retire. Now, hopefully, it's what you would love to do, but maybe, too, you just need a job, help pay the bills, or you need a job to stay out of trouble at home. Either way, today's guest has kind of an unusual job of helping people with their retirement work options. Now, are you looking for a flexible work schedule, perhaps? Maybe seasonal work, some compressed hours, or something else? Well, Shaney McCoskey has some great advice for people who may be considering their retirement options. Her company is Vitesse Consulting, and there's more to the name than you might think. Well, first of all, thanks, Shaney, for spending some time with us. Vitesse, so what's in a name?
I thought that the common denominators that sort of everybody wants in any walk of life, in any career, in any country, are vitality and success. So that's where the word Vitesse came from. And then I found out that it's the French word for speed. And I thought, you know what, that's kind of appropriate in this day and age because everything happens so fast. The velocity of change is unprecedented now versus what it used to be. And so I thought, well, that's kind of an interesting nuance in my name to have it be synonymous with speed as well.
It really is. The two fit perfectly, don't they?
Yeah, they sure do. And how do we as human beings adjust to that pace of change and react and stay smart and stay relevant, which, again, is very relevant for your audience.
As baby boomers begin, was expected to be a huge transition into retirement. Shaney, what are you seeing from your vantage point?
Well, you know, there's a lot of trends going on with the baby boomer generation that make flexible work arrangements more important for people to consider. You know, of course, as people live longer and some savings were decimated in the market over the last decade or so. Clearly, some people are continuing to work later than they had planned for financial reasons. But really, more than that, demographically and for health reasons, I mean, people are much healthier now than they used to be as they're getting into their 50s, 60s, and 70s. And so they don't necessarily want to retire and sit on a rocking chair. Demographically, the percentage of people 65 and over in the workplace has nearly doubled in the last three decades. So in 1985, it was 10.8%. Currently, we're at about 19%, at least according to the AARP. And when we look at statistics from 2010, people age 65 and over were 13% of the U.S. population. By 2013, it's projected to be 20% of the population. So just looking at the math of it, we're going to have more boomers and people staying in the workforce longer than past generations have.
That's true. You really had the importance of remaining relevant is so important all through life.
Yeah, absolutely. Because skills nowadays don't, it's not decades before they get stale. It's like weeks and months.
It is. And as things change so quickly, you really have to stay on top of it all the time.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one of the things that I wanted to bring up as we get to, you know, more of the logistics of how do boomers go about setting themselves up for success in flexible work arrangements. One of them is, you know, doing what they can on a proactive basis to stay relevant. you know, I entered this business of consulting on flexible work arrangements because the last job I had before this was running. I was chief operating officer of a marketing and PR firm that was all virtual. It had once been a brick-and-mortar business on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C., and in about 2004, the owner said, you know what? My people are traveling to see their clients or on-site with their clients, and when they're in the office, they're on their computers anyway, so what do I need all this darn overhead for? And so he sent everybody home with their computers and promptly moved to Colorado, at which point I met him, and he decided he'd rather play golf and ski and enjoy life as he got into his later years than run his business day-to-day. And so I really took control of the day-to-day operations of the company, did that for 5 years, and what I learned running that company where I had people reporting to me from almost 20 states, and we had customers in 35, 40 states, plus Europe and Canada and South America, was the basis for me wanting to help share that wisdom around with other people so that people could learn from my mistakes and the knowledge that I had built up over those years, which augmented the management experience I had over the couple of decades prior, where I spent most of my career working on Wall Street, mostly at Goldman Sachs in New York and in Chicago.
And as we all know, there are some institutional obstacles for people who are retired and seeking an encore career, if you will. And it sounds like you also address that in what you do.
Yeah, it is. And teaching people how to be creative about flexibility and how to make a business case for it, both at the individual level, team level, and the organization level. Because in order for flexible work arrangements to work over the long run, it's got to be a win-win situation for everyone involved. So, you know, I know one of the things that we were keen to share with your audience were just the array of options that could potentially be available to boomers. Because it's not just work from home. It's, you know, work from home gets all the attention because of what Yahoo did and Best Buy and, you know, a couple of big companies decided to rein in their work from home arrangements. And so that's almost become synonymous in the general population for flexibility. But there's really dozens, if not hundreds, of other options outside of just working from home that equate to flexibility.
So, Shani, what are some of the options for people who might be looking for some flexible work schedules or working part-time?
So there's a couple of real obvious ones. Working part-time, working part of the year as organizations flex up and down and need additional resources for their busy seasons or their what I call sort of in honest to the utility business, their peak load. Because, you know, utilities have to contract for extra electricity capacity during times of the year where they need to have enough energy to provide peak load capacity, primarily during the summers or in the case of cold climates also, you know, when things are super freezing in the winter. So a lot of organizations have the same concept of, you know, things get really busy certain times of the year. Accounting firms need additional help in tax season. Retailers need additional help from now until the end of the year, for example. So looking at doing part-year work is a little different than part-time. There's certainly also things like just arranging to work more flexible time. So it's just anything where you're starting and ending your workday that isn't the traditional 9-to-5. That can also look like compressed work weeks. So, for example, we're seeing a lot of people who want a long weekend compress their work week down into 4 days. So working longer hours, 4 days a week, and then you have a series of 3-day weekends, which is super energizing. Flexibility in the place where you work. So not just thinking about working from home, but for instance, I know especially in the boomer population, a lot of second homeowners, a lot of people who want to go vacation at their lake house or their beach house or their ski house, whatever the case may be, having the flexibility to do that for 2 or 3 months a year or whatever that looks like. And then, of course, there are a lot of different options in terms of just what does it look like to be flexible later on in the career. So maybe it's, you know what, I really want to work, I need a break, let me take a sabbatical. But be sure that you get comfort that your job is still going to be there when you get back, almost like a professor gets a sabbatical after a certain number of years of tenure. Getting companies to agree to extended leaves or longer vacation, and of course, that comes out of pay, you know, on a pro rata basis, that sort of thing. And then job sharing arrangements. I don't see any reason that baby boomers couldn't be successful in job sharing arrangements, which would make it part-time. And then the concept of a phased retirement where, you know, it's not all or nothing. So you don't go from working 60 hours a week all of a sudden to tomorrow I'm retired and I don't know what to do with myself. It's okay, maybe I'm working 60 hours a week this year, and next week it's going to be 45, and the year after that it's going to be 30. So you're sort of phasing out and not sort of doing this leap from all to nothing right at once. So that's just a handful of things for folks to think about.
And while our image of retirement may sound like some romantic dream, in reality, many of us just aren't cut out for that.
Right, especially bright, motivated people, right? We want to continue to be stimulated and engaged and have that social interaction, for example. And there are some companies that you'll tend to run into ageism, tacit or overt, less than at other companies. In fact, I was just reading an article in advance of having this dialogue with you about the National Institute of Health, the NIH. They consistently top the AARP's list of best companies to work for workers who are over 50 years old. And, you know, among the things that they do for flexibility, they have flexible scheduling, they make other accommodations, including health care and dependent care and job sharing and special well-being initiatives for people, you know, who are over 50 and whatnot. And there was the focus of the article was an 83-year-old man who has been at the NIH now. He's at the beginning of his seventh decade on the job there, 83 years old, and in no hurry to retire.
That's fabulous. Yeah.
Isn't that awesome?
It is. It really is.
So with that in mind, Shaney, what is it that makes older workers so valuable to employers?
You know, I would say for the most part, it's the institutional knowledge. You know, people who have been in the workforce for that long not only have additional career experience and maturity and the ability to mentor younger people, so that those are certainly attractive attributes, but what you hear them talking about consistently is how do we retain that institutional knowledge so that it doesn't just walk out the door when somebody retires, and importantly, how do we transfer that institutional knowledge, because the person will walk out the door eventually, even if it's 10 years later than anyone had anticipated. So that's really the key is, you know, as smart as some of these young kids are today, and they can code and they can start companies that get venture capital backing, you know, there are just certain things that come with the benefit of experience that they'll never have.
That's
until they have more experience, more years under their belt.
That's really true. Yeah, when you lose that kind of institutional experience, there's a big chunk.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially, you know, the boomers, again, like one of the things generationally is that you tend to see much more loyalty among that generation. And so a lot of those folks have been at their companies for 20, 30, 40 or more years. And, you know, whereas Gen X, Gen Y, they're more apt to have switched jobs every, you know, 3 to 5 years. But in the baby boomer generation, not so much the case. And so that institutional knowledge is even greater and more critical to retain for the company as they continue to grow and evolve.
So for somebody who's doing, let's say, a personal inventory and they want to really look at themselves and what they're good at, what they like to do, and what their next encore career should be, where should they start?
Well, you know, I think it's really important to get in touch with what pushes your buttons, like what turns you on, what's going to make you want to wake up in the morning and go to work. especially if you have the luxury of, you know, kind of starting greenfield and identifying the career or the field industry that you want to work in. And, you know, there's a number of assessments out there where you can do the answer all the questions, and it'll give you sort of an inventory of what your interests are based on your answers. There's also working with a career coach is a really great way to get in touch with what's inspiring and fulfilling for you. And so once you've done that, then you can start to target the companies that you want to work for within that field, or the companies that have the roles that you're looking to fulfill. Because, you know, if you're looking at a certain role as a certain industry, you could do that role across any number of industries or a variety of companies. And, you know, with the internet, there's so many great ways to look. I mean, even Fortune magazine publishes 100 best companies to work for every year, and there's lots of copycat lists out there of companies that are really great for people to work with. And then, of course, there are companies that are known for their flexibility, and a really great resource for that is the Families and Work Institute. They do a big competition every year, and tens of thousands of companies enter their competition, to basically showcasing what creative things they're doing for flexibility. And they actually have, I believe it's a free guide to a list of hundreds of companies that do really cool things on the flexibility side. And again, that might be just a great way for people to identify and target some certain companies, rather than just spending hours at a time on monster.com or through classified ads or something like that. And then once you interview, you know, sort of seeing if you can arrange something that's going to work for you. And the advice I would have for people in that situation is exactly the same as I would have for those folks who just want to transition into something more flexible where they already are.
So, Shani, if somebody was looking for your type of service in their hometown, what would they look for? Do you work mostly with people looking for work or with companies? How do you operate?
Yeah, you know, I work with both. So I have two pieces of my business. One is a coaching business, and my clients range anywhere from CEOs of companies and senior leaders of companies all the way through a spectrum of people up until people who have retired. You know, it's interesting because I have had three clients this year on the individual coaching side, where it's been more life/career coaching, like what do I want to do now? You know, and for some of them, it's been pursuing nonprofits. For some of them, it's reinventing themselves to pursue a second career. So on the individual side, it's really anyone who is interested in getting unstuck or making a transition and wants the help of a coach to help them really tap in to what fulfills them and to help keep them accountable with a plan of action to making it happen. So it's kind of two pieces. It's kind of figuring out what it is you want, because that can be a little bit overwhelming. And as coaches, we have great tools to help people really synthesize that. And then coaches really help launch people into action and hold them accountable for those actions. And then on the more business side of my practice, on the consulting side, yes, I work with companies, small, medium, and large, to help them implement flexible work strategies. And it can be anything from designing the strategy from scratch, which I highly recommend, because a lot of companies got into flexibility on an ad hoc basis. You know, I sort of call that management by exception. So for example, you know, Sally won't come back to work after maternity leave unless we let her work from home every Friday. Or, you know, Bill is going to leave because his wife is being transferred to San Diego, and, you know, we need to let him work out of San Diego and come into the headquarters once a month if we want him to stay. So that, you know, these arrangements have kind of happened ad hoc, but the reality is, flexibility is a strategy when it's done well. It's not an afterthought. And so just like any big strategy, it needs to be really fleshed out, and it has to involve culture and behavior from the C-suite all the way down through every individual contributor. So that's the strategy piece. And then on the execution side, I help people, or I help organizations when they already have flexibility programs or they're having trouble, you know, come in and figure out, okay, what can we switch around? Is it communication protocols? Is it, you know, the teams need better collaboration tools to help them work, all these people work remotely? Is there an accountability issue? So that's why things are falling through the cracks and things aren't working out. So it's both strategy and tactical implementation that I help organizations work with in regards to flexible workplace.
So you would be a great starting point for someone who wanted to learn more about these kinds of services. Give us a starting point of where someone might go.
Absolutely. So my website is vitesseconsult.com. So it's V-I-T-E-S-S-E consult.com. And my email address is shaney@vitesseconsult.com, shaney@vitesseconsult.com. And I'd be happy to talk further with any of your constituents and get them going on a path towards living a fulfilled second half.
And then, Shaney, some real-life tips on how someone might begin.
Sure. Well, you know, just as anyone thinks about pursuing a job where there's going to be flexibility, or you want to propose the flexibility for you, you know, keep a few things in mind. And I mentioned this one earlier, and it's really, really important that any of those arrangements have to meet the needs, not only of the employee, but also of the employer. And so it's critical to do your research and choose options to propose that are not only right for you, but your role, your industry, your teammates, your customers. There are lots of different options, and there is no one-size-fits-all solution. And when you're preparing to present your case to work flexibly, either to an existing employer or to a new employer, I always recommend that you approach that like an important sales proposal. And what I mean by that is, you know, really understanding the business case for flexibility in general. There's a ton of research out there. The Society of Human Resource Management, Families and Work Institute. My website has a lot of good statistics on why it makes good business sense for a company to have flex work. You know, things like higher employee engagement, better retention, much higher productivity, lower levels of absenteeism, of course, better well-being because employees are experiencing lower stress levels and so forth. And then, of course, cutting operating costs for company. There's a lot of benefits to the company. So understanding sort of the overall business case for flexibility and then being specific about the business case in your situation and showing the employer what I call the WIFM, what's in it for me. So what's in it for that company? And it could be a lot of different things, including what we talked about earlier in terms of the retention and transfer of institutional knowledge. Maybe it results in a better way to serve clients. I mean, that's always something that's of interest to an employer. And then being very detailed about how you think it can work practically on a day-to-day basis. And that's everything from, you know, what duties you're going to fulfill, what the timeline is, what system you want for account or you propose for accountability and for feedback. You know, what's the feedback mechanism if you're not in the office with your team and your manager on a day-to-day basis? So how do you want to deal with feedback and how frequently do you want to give it to make sure that it's working so that you can identify any problems early and often and get them fixed before they blow up and out of proportion?
Boy,
and
that's
I would
good.
Say lastly...
Go ahead. That's really, those are really good. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Uh-huh.
I was going to say, lastly, and again, we sort of danced around the subject a little earlier, but being sure that you can stay up to date. So being proactive with educating yourself if the company doesn't offer the necessary training. There are just gobs of free or really cheap resources out there online to educate yourself. It's this whole trend that everyone's calling education. So the U in education is replaced by the word Y-O-U. We can educate ourselves on so many things and be proactive with it, and especially be proving the facility with the technology tools, because that tends to be the number one argument why companies may not want to engage older workers. Oh, you know, they aren't current with technology. Well, there's no reason to, anyone of any age can't be current with technology because the resources are out there to teach yourself if your company hasn't had the foresight to do it for you.
Wow, that's great. Great advice. Well, Shani, thank you so much. The information is invaluable, and it's really, really cutting edge, I think. That it's good information. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this BloomerBoomer.com podcast. We provide transcripts for most of our podcasts. You can click on the transcript section of the website. You can also access all of our podcasts on iTunes. Finally, we would love it if you could leave a comment, good, bad, or indifferent, in the reply section of the podcast. Thanks again.